Welcome back to In the Know. I hope you have your thermal underwear and some hot chocolate.
Ooh, that sounds so nice right now. Once I can finally get out of this freaking podcast studio, that's what I'll do. I'll go home and do that.
Yeah, every time my grandma calls me, she's like, do you have upwards of two layers on right now? Because you should.
My mom, called me the other day. Heads up, I'm from Louisiana. And my mom called and she's like, I heard that if your skin is exposed for 15 seconds, you can get frostbite. You better cover up. And I was like, okay, thanks, Mom.
Is she right?
I don't know. I don't know. There's probably a science major listening right now who would know, but I have no clue.
Moms are always right.
Yeah, I know.
For the most part.
She also texted me to tell me she listened to our last episode and she liked it.
Aw.
Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Diamond.
Hey, Mom. Okay. let's jump into the headlines for this week. 16 months and two committees later, the University of Minnesota has yet to decide whether or not to rename key campus buildings. While the U is not alone in the debate, the pace of the renaming process is now one of the slowest in the country. In comparison, Yale University deliberated 6 months before removing John C. Calhoun's name from their building, while University of Pittsburgh took 6 months to rename a public health building.
The federal government shutdown is over, but now university scientists must grapple with being weeks behind in their research. The delay is particularly difficult for graduate students who need to finish their dissertations before the money runs out. While researchers can breathe a sigh of relief, a second shutdown in the next 3 weeks could throw another wrench in their work.
The All-Campus Elections Committee is upping the requirements to mount a referendum. The new rules increase the number of signatures needed and moves up the deadline for filing a referendum. But the ACEC has given conflicting statements on whether the rules have been finalized, and some student representatives remain confused. The decision is on the heels of last year's controversial referendum to cut university ties with companies that allegedly support the Israeli occupation of Palestine.
The University of Minnesota Police Department will not include body cameras in its upcoming budget request, breaking from the Minneapolis Police Department's lead. After reviewing the decision for 2 years, UMPD is citing insufficient infrastructure and privacy concerns as reasons to hold off on asking for the cameras just yet.
And those are our headlines this week.
And we're going to move on to number two. Our resolution related to fiscal year 2020 Twin Cities undergraduate non-resident non-reciprocity tuition rate.
I watched the Board of Regents meeting on YouTube when they were making this decision.
Just a reminder, this is an action item today.
And the person from the president's office,
Tonneson, Vice President Tonneson,
this when asked what the reason for the tuition hike was
this particular rate is not proposed to generate a certain amount of revenue. In other words, we did not calculate a desired revenue and back into the rate. Instead, it is a proposal at this level to better recognize the quality of the educational experience that these students receive compared to our peers and compared to the resident rates rank in those same comparison groups. We do anticipate that this particular rate would result in a movement in rank from about 12 to, well, from 12th today in the Big Ten to about 8 or 9 in that Big Ten comparison.
They wanted to reflect the quality of education, and they wanted to remain competitive against tuitions from other Big Ten schools. And so in that, like, I don't really get that. You know, competitiveness doesn't come from increasing tuition. And a lot of them were saying that they were super proud that now non-resident, non-reciprocity tuition will finally have a 3 in front of it.
It gets us to a 3 in front of our NR and our number. Michigan's got a 5 in front of their number.
And, you know, University of Michigan's has a 5, and we're finally in the competition. And I think that's completely irrelevant when you're talking about the diversity of the students coming here and the amount of opportunities you are, you know, holding away from students who can't afford that number. And, just kind of the way you're hurting families and the burden you're putting on students doesn't really make much sense.
That's Lily Ambort. She's a freshman majoring in global studies. Lily is one of the many out-of-state students that will be affected by a tuition hike proposed by the university. We talked to reporter Audrey Kennedy to learn more.
The decision to up tuition has kind of always been in the works. In 2015, Kaler put into action a plan to raise tuition to $35,000 by 2020. So every year, there's always been this idea that the Board of Regents is going to vote on how much to increase each year. The most recent increase was announced late December, whenever it was officially passed.
Quick footnote. This year, the Board of Regents voted on a 10% tuition hike. Last year, it was 15%, and the year before that, it was 12.5%. Okay, now you have some context. Back to the story.
What voice, if any, was the student body given in this decision-making process?
The two student reps to the Board of Regents, Gile Carondi and Austin Kraft, they put together a campaign called Keep It Low through MSA, the Minnesota Student Organization, where they urged out-of-state students to send in letters that they would then present to the board in order to get a student voice, because students can't actually speak at Board of Regents meetings. Only the specific elected student reps can. So they really wanted to get the student voice in there.
What did the students that you have talked to think about this reasoning?
A lot of them almost don't believe it.
We sat down with four students to hear their experience with paying the increasing tuition. They came from all around the country.
I am from the great state of Texas, Dallas more specifically.
I'm from New York City.
And where are you from originally?
St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm from Davenport, Iowa.
Lily is a first-generation student and said she had to figure out how to pay for college largely on her own.
It kind of was really complicated at first. I didn't know how to fill out the FAFSA. I didn't know what documents I needed. I was super, you know, into this mindset that scholarships were going to pay for everything. And when I finally got, you know, my aid disbursement and it said I needed to take over $20,000 in loans out, I was shocked.
Lily admits she was naive about how much tuition would cost, but the university seemed reasonably affordable compared to other state schools. She called it a middle-of-the-road decision, not the cheapest, but not too expensive. It doesn't seem like that anymore.
It was kind of like I worked really hard my senior year to apply to as many scholarships as possible. And so I wound up with about, I don't know, $20,000 to $25,000 in scholarships to attend here. And that only covered my first semester. And so I wound up having to take out almost an equal amount in loans to cover all the rest of my expenses to come here. And so I thought that it was like my scholarship money would go farther than it did. And now that there's, you know, an expected tuition increase, I think it's going to be even worse next year.
Tuition was a key factor for junior Isaiah Ogren when he was choosing a college as a high school senior in Dallas, Texas. Today, he's the University of Minnesota Student Government Speaker of the Forum, and he believes the Board of Regents could be discussing tuition hikes more productively.
Absolutely. So there are kind of two ways to think about it. When we look at the number, that is the dollar figure that people pay, that's really a proxy for how many out-of-state students do we admit. Because when you have to make up a budget shortfall, as the regents do from time to time, you can either raise tuition or you can just let in more students who are already paying that inflated rate. So I would just prefer that we have an honest discussion and that one that's clear about how many out-of-state students are we going to admit, rather than having this conversation about an amorphous number that sometimes it's 5%, sometimes it's 10%, sometimes it's 15%. Let's just have a conversation about how many out-of-state students are we going to admit and be honest about that.
Do you have plans to go to grad school after you graduate?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Has your experience with the tuition hikes during your undergrad instilled any sense of caution about choosing a graduate school?
100%. 100%.
Can you talk about that some?
Yeah, so law school is expensive no matter how you look at it, but I'm still a resident of Texas, and so it makes Texas a much more attractive option in terms of going back for law school.
If a student who's a high school senior this year, who's in a similar position financially to where you were when you were in your senior year of high school, if they asked you, do you think it's a good idea for me to come to University of Minnesota, what would you tell them?
I'll address this to my younger self. I'll talk to Isaiah 24 months ago. I would say, Isaiah, you're going to love Minneapolis. You're going to love being in the city where Prince made all his music, and you can see murals of the Purple One when you ride the train into Minneapolis. You're going to love some of the professors you meet. You're going to get to take graduate courses in law, in the discipline that you are so passionate about. You're going to meet fabulous people. in student government who are just as passionate as you are about making a change. But I would say you can also do that at the University of Texas. There are a lot of things you can do at the University of Texas just as easily, and you're going to pay a lot less money.
Cassidy Drummond is a junior studying political science. When I met her, she was walking with crutches, but still full of energy.
Over the summer and then first semester this year, I've worked at Frontier Hall, University Village, Ichido Ramen, and Caribou. So, like, I on average, and then I'm also double majoring and double minoring, but I, like, can't afford to do it in less than 4 years. So, like, I took 24 credits last semester. And, like, I take 20, like, each semester. Mm-hmm. And then I work, like, an average of, like, 30 hours.
She said she doesn't see any benefits each time tuition is raised. But she's a junior, and it would be difficult to just pick up and enroll in a different school.
And it's, like, it's just frustrating because, you know what I mean? Like, I'm working four jobs. Like, I'm trying really hard to, like, and I love college. And I had hip surgery 2 weeks ago. And so this past week, I didn't work for, like, an entire week of school. And the difference between, like, not having to work and work during school is wild. Like, if you don't have to work during school, like, and this isn't, like, to guilt you. It's just, like, good for you. Like, just be so thankful that you don't have to, because it really does just add another burden. And it's, like, if I'm going to be in this much debt, like, I want to be able to, like, enjoy school. But when they continuously increase it, like, I'm not able – I'm, like, it's, like, I, like, and I still enjoy it, but, like, not nearly as much as I would – like, as much as I would if I didn't have to work.
Outside of work, many students rely on their parents to battle the costs of college. Elizabeth Ochoa, a sophomore majoring in astrophysics, relies on both. But as tuition creeps higher, so does her anxiety about making her mom pay for fees she struggles to afford.
I worked a job. I work at Panera with my mom. And so I worked, and we all just kind of, like, pooled resources in terms of, like, oh, this is what my grandpa has, because he had saved up for my mom's college when she was younger, and then she didn't go, so he had a little bit left over, but obviously wasn't a lot compared to what college costs today. Then it was what my mom could pay on, like, credit cards and stuff like that, because we can't exactly afford loans. Like, our credit's decent enough to get some good ones, but with interest in the long run, it's a lot easier for us to pay with what we have first and take loans out as a last resort. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty much what we were doing, because I got a $10,000 a year scholarship, so we only had to pay a little bit of the tuition. Mm-hmm. And we agreed that I would pay for things like my rent and my food and pretty much, like, keeping myself alive. So that, and my mom said that as far as now, they could take care of, like, tuition and things like that, so I wouldn't have to worry about that. And so that's kind of the agreement we came to at the beginning, and it was working out pretty all right.
And then what happened?
I mean, obviously, we start running a little low. And, like, right now it's still working. My mom had to put, like, my last tuition on her Discover card, when now she can barely use her Discover card because it almost maxed it out. And so now with, like, the tuition hike, we have to, like, reconfigure all of our numbers.
Like, do y'all openly talk about her paying for your tuition, especially with these tuition hikes? Or is that just kind of a silent agreement that you know you made and you leave it at that?
For the most part, it's, like, a silent agreement. Usually when tuition payment comes around, like when the bills are due, I'll be like, hey, do you want me to chip in for a little bit? Because I have some, like, surplus money from my paycheck that I didn't spend. But she just kind of, like, is like, no, we're fine. Don't worry about it. You go study. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for that. But also, it's, I'd like to talk about it a little bit more just so I'm in the loop. Mm-hmm. But
have these tuition hikes made you, like, as the tuition has been rising, has that made you more eager to talk to your mom about it, to kind of open up that communication?
I don't know if eager is the right word. It makes me anxious. Because the more I hear about tuition hikes, the more I think, oh, I'm studying here when I could be studying back home. Because I got into, like, a school back in Missouri that is a lot more cost effective, but it just didn't have the program I wanted. And I'm like, oh, I'm here where we're paying so much money and we're paying more money now when I could be back home paying under $20,000 a year. And I feel bad about it. I feel bad putting all that on my family. And so every time, like, they're like, oh, we're raising tuition again, I'm like, why? And it makes me anxious, and because I'm like, because I want to be here, obviously. But every time they do that, I'm like, is this going to be the time where I should bring up, should I come back home?
If you could send President-elect Gabels a message, what would you ask or tell her?
I would say that it's important for this university to keep their doors open to people of all walks of life, including people that come from low-income families and don't have the opportunity to pay for such a high tuition, because it will give us the opportunity here at the university to cater to a wider audience and enrich minds that otherwise wouldn't be getting these opportunities. And that would put us, that, in my opinion, that would make us the most prestigious school.
Awesome. Thanks so much for talking.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
In the Know is produced by me, Luke Diamond, and reported by my co-host, Tiffany Bui. Our intro music is by J.D. Duggan. Listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you want to know more about the tuition hike and how it's affecting students, keep an eye out for Audrey's feature article in the paper next week. As for the podcast, that's all for this week. Thanks for listening.